find out.
Got it.
And here we are, and Zoom is not going to explode on me just yet. We're here with another episode of Binary Jazz. As always, I'm Chris, Jazz Sequence on the Internet. I'm here with Allison and Gary, who are Allison Plus and Binary Gary, respectively, on the Internet. And
ooh, I think he just called us respectable.
And this is a thing we do, regularly, have a podcast and talk about things, and that's all.
I was
don't have an opening if... bit.
We never do. I was wondering if Gary had any more questions.
Oh, because we didn't finish them,
and it's okay to say no.
We didn't finish them last week. We were caught talking about for those of you just joining who didn't listen to the last episode, we ended the call mid conversation directed towards Catholics or our knowledge of being Catholics.
it was about I don't know, spirit essence.
Oh, it was, yeah, wisdom as a spirit.
Yeah.
Since then, I've read some essays on that were written like 2021 ish, early 22, like still like raging pandemic. And there were two common threads that I saw. The first was that there is a, this is an inflection point. And it has to be an inflection point for humanity. And I, as I sit here in, is it May, end of May, almost June of 2023, I'm like, I don't know that that part is held true.
When was it written?
There were several that I read, but 2021, 2022. So more than a year into it. But it seems to me that collectively we're all back to our normal bullshit. Yes, you, dear listener, included. I don't actually know if that's true. But I can't say that there was like a inflection point for humanity, but maybe it's proximity. Maybe in 5 years I'll look back and go, oh yeah, that did change things. But it doesn't seem like it. The other point was, oh, this was a little woo. And it was phrased in different ways, but this idea that people have, sometimes you hear it like called, like somebody called it a third eye, but also like having your antenna up and like being aware of like the energy, the juice, I like that, that's going on around you. And I thought that was really fascinating in like, you know, very normal, non-woo type context for people to observe that. I like referring to it as an antenna, you know, people's antenna are more in tune, more up, more what do you do with an antenna that make it listen better? I don't know. When I say up, I like
dialed
cars
in.
Where it like those are so cool.
I've definitely met people who are more in tune with different frequencies than your average person. I don't know. I know that makes me sound absolutely out there, but
I want to hear more about this.
No, it's just like I have an acquaintance that is so dialed in to like I'm hesitant to even talk about it because I know how nutty it makes me sound by proxy.
I'll share one then. I have a person maybe you can just like I don't know tap. Appropriately, like once for yes and twice for no, whatever it is. I have a person that I'm friends with, and there it's like whenever I see them, they go, "How are you?" And you know, you always give the answer like, "Oh yeah, I'm fine." You know, like the surface level, and they know, they just know, like that time when they need to go, "Yeah, but how are you really?" Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, damn it.
So they like they know your tells. They know the ins and outs.
But it doesn't even need to be in person. Like it can be on a phone call. So it's not like, yeah.
I mean, there's definitely, like My partner is incredibly intuitive and can read, is really good at reading people. And whether there's some sort of like extra sensory thing happening, or she's just really good at reading body language and subtext and various cues. I mean, it almost doesn't matter what you call it. It's the same. It's manifesting in the same way. And you can call it something woo. Or you can call it like a very good observer of people. Like it's a, you know, just a natural knack, or, you know, a developed talent or something. You know, she's also observant in other ways of like noticing things out in the world that I wouldn't notice, you know, without a lot of like, wait, what do you like? It's not just that I'm blind either. Like,
imagine like riding in a car like that. Stop sign.
I mean, that happens too, but that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Really in tune to the stop signs and traffic patterns.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, we'll be out in the world and there will be, you know, I don't know, an elk like half a mile out in like a middle of a, you know, grassy plain where they are like, you know, naturally evolved to blend into their landscape. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I don't see. Oh, yeah. Okay. I can see it now. But like, she'll pick it out like, you know, a mile away. Like, she'll be like, oh, it's right there. My daughter has learned this talent too. Like, they're both really good at that sort of thing.
I think I find myself in certain emotional situations where I can't put like my protective barrier up efficiently enough to like stave off other people's emotional states. So I find that that's something that like I'm extra susceptible to, which I think is partially why I don't know, chicken or egg, like, am I introverted because of that or that part of my introversion? I don't know, but.
Yeah, you absorb other people's emotive being and it's
just exhausting. Like, yeah. I'm like, I can't do it sustainably for a really long period of time without there being like repercussions in the days after. But my friend is like, I don't know, like she gave me a Reiki treatment and like, I don't really know where I fall on that, but I was like,
I don't know where I fall on Reiki either.
But you know what, when you're like, I don't know, like I was in a really not great place and I was basically just like, you know what, like you believe in it. So like, let's do this. Yeah. Like if it makes me feel better, I'm game.
Yeah.
And she did it. Well, it did. And I couldn't explain why. And I was like, if it's placebo, I'll take it. Like,
right.
I don't care. But also she walked away with knowing things about me that aren't private, but that you would have to like have like an Allison dossier to know about. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, like she knew that I had injured my left knee at some point, which happened to me when I was like 14. And it's not something that like comes up very often.
Let me tell you the story of my experience with the Zen Osho tarot deck and my marathon tarot reading night at a party at King College. I really like the Zen Osho deck was like, I think the first, maybe not the first, but probably the first-ish tarot that I got. And I liked it because it's very wibbly wobbly. It's very like jazz. It's very like, you know, you interpret like what you get from the images is the correct answer. It's less sort of rigid than some of the other, like what I've learned later and what I've experienced with other tarot decks, where it's like very much this means this and this represents that and this symbol here is specifically that thing. Like it's very fluid and Zen. I mean, that's the whole point, right? We won't go into the fact that Osho Zen is a very weird, like culty kind of little subgenre over there. We're just going to go with the idea. Anyway, so I really liked this deck and I used it a little bit on myself. And then I think I probably said something at some point at this party that like, oh yeah, I do tarot. And I ended up doing like a series of tarot readings, like one after another. And it was very much that experience where I was, I don't know if it was the cards and they were just on that night. I don't know if it was myself in being able to subconsciously read the body language and context around the people coming to me and being able and responding to that, or if it's something like, you know, the divine channeling itself through me as a, you know, practicer of divination or something. You know, I don't know I don't have the words to describe the scientific reason for what happened, but what happened, the end result was I was able to extract through the cards things that people hadn't talked about with hardly anyone. And there was one particular there's one girl who had a very bad, horrible experience that had just recently happened to her that she had not told anyone except for maybe like her best friend at the time. And there were very significant like glances between the two of them while I was doing this reading, and I was able to, through subtext and through like reading the cards, like I knew what it was, even if I didn't have to say it, and she knew that I knew what it was too, and was kind of like, oh my god, like how do you even know that?
Wow. Yeah.
And I did a whole bunch of things like that, and it was the same sort of experience where like it was, things were coming out that I had no right to know. Like there nobody said anything, nobody, like maybe I'm really good reading a reader of people, maybe, but there was something happening, and it was pretty wild. And like things like that like always leave me with a, like, I don't know, magic is real, I guess, sort of like after effect, because like they're just things that can't be scientifically explained, like, you know.
But I feel like that's like, I don't know, I'm the person that's like, I think most of what we think of as magic or like woo is just stuff that we don't haven't explained yet science wise, right? Yeah. Like, because I think there was a time when it's just like, well, we didn't understand, like, I don't know, what's a good example, like gravity or like something, where we're just like, how is everything staying still? Like, I just think there's a lot of, I don't know.
Yeah, the giant fire dragon chases the scary white dragon across the sky every day. It takes about 24 hours or 12 hours, I guess. And you know, they have a constant battle with the white dragon and the fire dragon are just constantly fighting each other and taking control. And that's how the sky works.
Yeah. And now we're all part of the cult of Chris. Go for it, Gary. You've got a thought.
Do you think, I guess at least the first question, do you think in these different essays I've read that have this concept, do you think that there is more awareness of that? Well, Chris, I'll use your example and say that, like, your recognition that there was something. Magic's probably a fine word for these purposes, but like, do you think that there is more recognition of magic at this point? As a result of the pandemic?
I'm not sure how it ties or if it ties to the pandemic. Maybe it ties to the pandemic. I could certainly see that as a trigger point, only because the pandemic forced us to, you know, turn inward and do maybe more reading or maybe expose ourselves to other things because we're bored as shit because we can't do things with people, you know?
Well, I also think there's like an introspection that a lot of people were forced into.
Right, right. What I do know is that when I was, you know, in high school and later and looking for woo-related books, it was always off in like the personal growth sort of like back corner of the bookstore, like hidden, like maybe there's like a shelf and a half, like it's just like this tiny little corner, like hidden away because we don't want to talk about that. Maybe it's even right next to like the other like religious theology books, and it's like, you know several stacks of like, you know, Christian theology, and then a tiny little personal growth section, and like five of those books are like, you know, from Llewellyn Publishing or something. Allison knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes. I was like, wow, that's like right on the nose.
And what I know is that we were just at Barnes and Noble like not 2 or 3 weeks ago, and there is like in full freaking view an end cap of woo related stuff, like books and tarot and just stuff, and like there's a whole big section of it, and like I was like, wow, that's a thing, you know. Maybe I don't know if it's because like people don't go to bookstores anymore because they only get books online, and so like the target demographic is narrower, and so it's the people that would go to a physical bookstore are more likely to be into woo stuff than the people that were going to bookstores 20 years ago, maybe. Or maybe it's this thing where like people were forced into this period of introspection, and through that have come around the other side and with some sort of understanding of other stuff. I don't know, but there's definitely a distinction that I noticed.
I think there's definitely also like tech communities have something to do with it, right? I mean, like you've got your like little niches of communities and TikTok and all the things, witch talk, as it were.
Witch talk.
And it's like, I think the capability of coming together as community online has increased with the pandemic, because people were like, well, I can't meet up in person, so I'm delving into all these random interests online. And then also some of it overlaps, like the Venn diagrams definitely overlapped with like companies discovering that there's money to be made off of people with disposable income of a certain age group that can spend money on tarot cards and crystals and all the things, because they're in that like really ripe demographic for it. And so some of it is just like capitalist.
But do you think those communities have developed more or larger more recently? Because like I remember at the same time, birth of the internet, et cetera, like, you know, I was doing a lot of solo practitioner stuff. And where does solo practitioners go? Where do solo practitioners go when, besides the bookstore and the library and like check out everything related and drawing down the moon and all that stuff? Well, they go online, and there were online communities even then in like 1997 and whatever, like and you know, mid 90s, like there was a lot of stuff that I was finding and communities that were, you know, burgeoning communities at the time. So it's not like it wasn't there and hasn't been there.
No, that's true. I guess it's just like the next generation's version of that, right? Like them stumbling upon something that feels like it's just for their interests. And I feel like while in the beginning it was like message boards and ICQ and like all the things, I feel like the algorithm is like dialed into like a crazy extent where it's like, if I watch, because I'm on TikTok now, by the way, just as a like passive absorber of content. But it's like, if I watch two videos of a certain subject, it's like crazy to watch how it feeds me more of that content and gets rid of other content that I might have wanted to see.
Yeah.
Like it's really interesting to watch, where it's like I'll watch videos that I'm not interested in at all just to see my algorithm like shift radically.
How lasting are those shifts? Like if you watch some random thing, if you watch some random thing that you wouldn't have otherwise watched, for how long are you getting fed related things to that?
If I keep watching them, it'll keep feeding me that. But if I then switch back to a different, like if I'm like, I want to go back to like macrame TikTok, then it'll after, I would say like 5 to 10 videos will feed me other videos.
Are we talking like, so it's like a number of, it's not like you're watching like weird alt-right stuff for like 3 days after you happen to like morbidly curious.
No, it's pretty fast. And it really registers, at least for me, it seems to really register. Like if I swipe off something right away, it won't even bother.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to watch people like take out their earwax. That's not my thing. Like, I'm just like, what? Like, this is not why I'm on TikTok. Sorry, Gary. We've totally diverted from here.
No, this is good. I want to go back to the Barnes and Noble thing though, and say, like capitalism in this case has to be used as a measuring stick. Like, yeah, maybe demographics have changed, but capitalism like self-filters. Like if it wasn't making money, it wouldn't be in an end game.
Right.
So
yeah,
whatever the percentage is there, like it's not insignificant. The cost to rent that store location hasn't changed that much that, you know, in 20 years, at least as a percentage of top line sales, that it would be that they would say, oh, we could just eat it at the on this end cap. You know, the capitalist imperative is to make as much as possible as fast as possible. So that is a data point that's not invaluable, regardless of the changing demographics that visit the store. I want to go back to something you said, Allison. I'm curious about the concept that there's a scientific explanation that we just haven't been able to uncover yet.
Oh, for magic or whatever.
And that's broad. I mean, obviously it's broad. And I'll use the example of there's like this quasi useful example when we had Jude, he was alive. It was a dog. I feel like I should throw that in really quickly.
Yeah, I was. Did you see the like mask of confusion on my face?
Of course, everyone knows my dog Jude. Jude was our dog for many years, and we moved up here to North Carolina. He's still alive, and he 16 or something. Like he was old. Good run. Near the end of his days, I would take him out before bed, and there was one night I went outside and something just felt off, and he could feel it too in the air. I think I probably shared this, but it's worth rehashing. So we went to the tree that he likes to pee on before calling it a night, and like we're both of us like we, you know, it was like the tension was there. Like I could feel it in the leash. He was looking around. Like usually he's just, you know, listless, but he was on alert. And I'm like, man, this is weird. And so we go in, and I'm like, I wonder what the hell that was. Like there was no reason for me to be scared or anything. Like there's a huge street light here. There's nothing around. It's a quiet street. As I was closing the door, I realized like right as the door almost closed, like I'm like, oh, it's death. It's death. I didn't know why, but I'm like, what was so scary about that to me? And then it was 2 days later that Ty found a dead deer down the hill. So my theory is this deer was down the hill dying at that point. He'd been hit by a car and was down there suffering. But there's no logic. I mean, there wasn't a sound. There wasn't like a movement, and it was far enough from the porch. You couldn't see it from the porch, you know, but there was a part of me that was aware and a part of the dog that was aware. And I don't know if it was that. I don't know if I keyed off of the dog being aware. You know, I'm not like maybe there's a simple explanation.
I've always gone back, and I don't know if this is still true, but I think it's still probably mostly true. Gone back to the idea, there's something I read a very long time ago that was basically to the extent of like we only know like a small fraction of we only understand a small fraction of how the brain works, and I've always thought that the unknown part, that's where magic lives. It's the areas that we haven't explored. That's where like magic lives. That's maybe where God lives. That's where, or gods. That's where like all the stuff that we don't have a framework to explain is explained, and we just don't have the means to like put metrics on it, you know, to analyze it objectively.
The metaphor I've been using lately to describe that understanding that part of the brain is like, it's so simple and so dumb, but it works for me. So like I had a crack on my phone screen, years ago, and I called a place and I was like, hey, can you replace my screen? And they're like, well, how bad is the crack? And I'm like, let me take a picture and send it to you. And I'm holding my phone and I'm like, am I going to take a picture? Like I can't. It's the thing. Like I can't, the thing can't see the thing to take a photo of the thing. And I feel like that's the problem.
Schrodinger's cracked iPhone.
but it's, you know, like it's there, like the brain's there, and the brain can be like, I can't actually introspect this part because I need that part to do that thing. Like it's physically not there. I don't know if that's true or not. It feels like a good analogy, and for me, it works for now.
Well, there's also like this idea, like, you know, culturally, we are attracted to like superhero stories, in varying degrees. But like a lot of those stories are not like they don't exist in a vacuum. And many of those things that are described in superhero fiction and comic books and whatever is based vaguely on things that occasionally do happen in real life. Occasionally there is somebody who is randomly superhumanly strong or randomly like, or like was, I read a thing about like somebody was in an accident and then immediately like after the accident learned like, you know, I don't know, astrophysics or something, like some really complex thing they had no knowledge of before. And then suddenly like something just triggered in their brain as a result of the accident. And now they have the capability of knowing stuff that they didn't know before. And again, like there's so much unexplained stuff about the brain and like, you know, there, maybe we are harboring superhero genes somewhere in there. If we could unbury the buried parts and like stuff that doesn't get used or the way that neural connections are made, like if those pathways are just like tweaked a little bit, maybe they do other things, or maybe they're already doing them. Like, I kind of think that our perception and what we describe as magic is like our brains already making connections, and but we aren't aware of how those connections are working. And so like we don't see how our brain is like processing this information, but it is processing the information such that, Gary, you're able to know when something died, even if you didn't know, if you didn't see it, didn't hear it. There's no, like, your senses aren't giving you that information, but there's some other thing that's happening, something that is like true, like making those connections in your brain that's allowing you to come to that conclusion with, you know, in this case, like presumably accurate, you know, accurate assumption.
Yeah, I think, that's the other part is maybe not, like, maybe it was absolutely unrelated and the doer isn't there for 24 hours later. Like, I don't know.
But then it was a premonition. Then it was like you sensing that it would be, yeah. I mean, you know, like you could call it a million things.
I feel like one of the popular areas that this is being explored in right now is people really wanting to like apply quantum physics on this, right? And yeah, I can jam with that. That's cool. I think the other part that's easy to forget is when we look at like animals, right? Like they don't second guess that kind of stuff. Like the dog knew, yep. And 2 days later, did it matter to him at all? No,
nope.
this self-awareness is finite. Whereas we have this problem where we need to take it apart and unpack and understand it and like get how it works. Like the dog didn't care, like went out, freaked out.
Yeah, and the word that we use, the word that we use to describe that is instinct. But like a dog's instinct,
yeah.
Like I believe that we have just trained our instinct out of ourselves. Like we don't trust that part of ourselves. There's a book I've probably mentioned it on the show before. There's a book called The Gift of Fear that I read in college, and basically the idea is that your brain is right, and like if your brain is telling you you're in danger, then whether you can quantify it or not, you are just. And the idea is that if you're feeling that fear, if you're feeling that like something's not right, that you need to trust that rather than pushing that down, because it is your brain responding to stimuli, whether you are aware of the stimuli and conscious of those stimuli or not. And yeah, like it talks about like how people didn't do that and this is what happened and like, you know, self-defense training and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's used for a lot of things, but like the core concept of the gift of fear is that, you know, we are processing information all the time, whether we know it or not. So if we get a bad vibe, then we need to do a better job of trusting that. And we've trained ourselves to not, because there's this fallacy that humans don't have instinct. And instinct is just a word to describe a thing that we don't understand, which is dumb.
I have to share, we were playing the game Parks last night. Katie was playing and it came to be her turn. And it's your turn. And she was very focused. And I wasn't sure if she heard. I said, Yuna, it's your turn, right? She said, I'm processing. I'm like, okay. I look at your space, but it cracked me up like a, she saw it as like she was doing like a running formulas, computing, considering possibilities, which by the way, she's gotten really good at that game. It used to be like, you know, we'd play and she'd get distracted chasing things that didn't matter, but now she's like, she's a powerhouse. Like, I'm kind of afraid of her.
It's a really good game.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Do you have the expansions?
I don't have the expansions, although I saw them at Barnes & Noble when we were at Barnes & Noble looking at the Woo things. And I was like, we should get those. We also need to get the expansions for Wingspan. That's another one.
We have
one expansion for Wingspan.
Which one do you have?
The Europe one.
Okay, I think we have Oceania. I don't remember.
Wingspan is a board game about birds.
Beautiful game. Another beautiful game.
Yeah.
Parks is beautiful. If you're not a board gamer and you're like, oh, I don't like weird blah, 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 like, check these games out.
No, you definitely should. Yeah.
Wingspan is beautiful. And whether you win or lose, you still have just a wonderful journey playing it. It's good for, like,
Because if nothing else, you learn about birds. I mean, how is that bad?
Does it include flightless birds?
Yes, I believe so.
Some are. Yeah. I would love to see a Wingspan Penguins edition. But. And the same thing with Parks. Like, Parks is maybe not as educational, but it's still beautiful, and it still gets you thinking about Mother Earth.
Yeah, I mean, the point of Parks. We kickstarted Parks when it was on Kickstarter, and the thing that attracted me about Parks as a concept was that it was about making the journey last and making memories along the way rather than immediately getting to the destination. And that is a value that I think this family applies to traveling to national parks. Like, we're not about, like, going to the thing, taking the picture in front of the sign and, like, hitting all of the stops that are, like, the expected stops. We're all about, like, going deep and, like, finding all the hidden places and making sure that, like, we want to find all the cool slot canyons. We want to find all the places where the people aren't, and make our memories there. And I appreciate the philosophy behind Parks, and that's my favorite part about it. Also, the art is amazing.
I don't remember what the second expansion is. There's Nightfall, and then the other one is called, like, it's something about wildlife. Maybe it's just called Wildlife. But the Parks cards in Wildlife are a decidedly different design, but still somehow fit in. And it's just another beautiful experience. I didn't win last night. I came in.
So we're not hearing from a winner right now. <You're> not... I have a friend who she's one of, like, six or seven siblings, and in their house, whoever won the board game had to clean up the board game. Keep you humble.
Oh, that's a good rule. I don't.
It would drive me nuts. I always want cleaners. I want things to go back where they belong. I want to be put away right.
I played Settlers of Catan the other day for the first time, and I was really bad at it.
That's a really. There's a learning curve.
I think it's overrated.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at @binaryjazz. Special thanks to Serpiente Negra Ensemble for the use of their tracks for our intro and outro music. You can find them online at serpientenegra.bandcamp.com. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the form on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.